Hi, and welcome to the Japan Baseball Weekly Podcast. It's for the week of October 24th. I'm John Gibson, and with me on a lovely Sunday morning, a sleepy Sunday morning, is Jim Allen. What's happening, buddy?
I'm asleep. Go back and call me. Call me later. No, I'm
nothing
I'm
donuts and coffee can solve here.
Donuts ain't solving nothing for me these days.
I'll send you a donut and coffee emoji.
Yeah, emojis are okay. Yeah, okay.
All right, we're saddled up and ready for the Japan series ride. We're going to talk about game one on the show, and we're going to look ahead at to the rest of the series and then talk about the draft that went on Thursday. So let's start swinging.
Clearing the bases!
All right, so the Japan series kicked off on Saturday. We had game one. I talked to lots of people trying to get their gauge on what they feel. I started with Michael Westbay, our own Michael Westbay, and he says, I'm going to go with the Carp in five. He said the Carp was the only team to do well against the Pacific League in interleague play, and they beat the Fighters 2 out of 3, and he said he thinks Jim's point that the Fighters have been the only PL team to lose the Nippon Series over the past decade is also a trend working against the Fighters. You believe in that kind of stuff? Trends with teams where the players
really,
are all different?
Well, yeah, I mean, who's even the same player as was on 2012? I mean, who's Nakata and Young Daikon, and there's a few.
Yeah.
Kensuke Tanaka.
Zenshi Masi, yeah.
Yeah, there's a few, but yeah. it's a different team, and didn't get any better results yesterday, but it's
right.
A different team.
And then Michael also left a little note at the end. He says, Kikuchi for MVP. Love it.
Okay.
Love
it. I know you do because you're campaigning for him.
Okay. And then NPB tracker Patrick Newman, he says, Carp in seven. And he says, I think the Carp have the better lineup and defense, and the Fighters have the better rotation and a few more options in the bullpen. But Hiroshima has home field and somewhat better intangibles with Kuroda's retirement taking an edge over Ohtani's magic, he says. He says, I think it'll be a great series, probably right up there with 2011 and 2013 in recent memory. You know, the Kuroda thing, and we'll get to his retirement later, obviously, and I thought that could be an inspiration, but it's not going to really be a different kind of or a new kind of inspiration because he'll be pitching a game, at least one.
Sure.
And if he gets game three, he might come back and pitch again. So he can have a big impact on it. So yeah, it's not like somebody's helping him or going to carry him. He's going to have to earn it.
Yeah, which will be, you know, he's had trouble with big games of late. And obviously his game in the Central League Climax Series final stage was not a great one. And but having said that, you know, he's always, you know, I don't know, skip the pseudo psychological babble, but yeah, it's going to be interesting because he's, you know, he's in a situation where these are his last games,
right? And he knows
and it. I don't think he's going to be worried about messing them up. He's gonna be going, you know, going for broke and let it all hang out. And I think we'll see the best Kuroda possible, which is bad news for the Fighters.
Yeah, well, the best Kuroda possible still might not be good enough to win, but we'll see. Jason Koskri, our buddy, says, I like the Fighters, except I think the Carp might tee off on some of their relievers. And he says, I guess I'll ride with Atsunori Inaba and stick with it. In six games, he's going to take the Fighters. So, interesting. I didn't see where Inaba picked, but I know he's on the news.
It would be a surprise if he didn't pick the Fighters.
Well, yeah, he used to play there, so why wouldn't he? Our buddy in Toronto, Claudio Rodriguez, he picks the Fighters in seven. He thinks it's a 50-50 series. The Carp winning would make a better story, but I think Nippon Ham is more cold-blooded, and they come with a hungry Ohtani.
Ah, okay.
So he's still hungry then, because yeah, we'll get to game one here in a second.
But okay.
Yeah.
He's still hungry at this part of the podcast.
Right. Needs more donuts. NPB Reddit. NPB Reddit says he's going to pick the Carp in five just to be a loner, a rebel. But I put this out on Facebook and on Twitter, and I'm going to read some of those as well. But there are some other people who picked the Carp in five, so you're not that much of a loner or a rebel.
Okay. Join the herd.
Yeah, join the herd, buddy. Among JBW fans, other than Dave McNeely, who is a.k.a. the NPB card guy on, mm-hmm. on Twitter, he left us a response that was nothing short of non-committal. But here are some other picks. The Wiz O picks the fighters in five.
Hmm.
And he made it clear that he's a carp hater. So I think that had something to do with it.
You know, I got that impression too. I'm going, what's up with that? I don't know who the fighters are, but they're not the carps. So let's go with the fighters.
Yeah. Paul Masao Wisham says carp in six. Pete Duffy says, I'm going to say the carp in five. So there's the rebel, another rebel. And he says,
go, you join the other rebels. The crowd of loners over there. Sorry.
Yeah. He says, give the crusty old Kuro-chan a fitting send-off, he says. Now, rusty. I'm just gonna like use this guy's first name because I don't want to try to butcher his last name. It's Mike and then B-A-I-R-E-U-T-H-E-R. So you go for it. He says fighters in six. I'm not taking a knife to that name. I won't even try.
Okay.
Kyle Warlitz says carp in six. Steve Sipa, and that's S-Y-P-A, says fighters in six. Peter Peterson says I'm hoping for the fighters probably in six. So, I think the overwhelming, I didn't read them all, with the overwhelming majority has the carp winning the series, and I'm kind of surprised. I thought with all the information out there and the way we've talked about the interleague and the way obviously the Pacific League is dominated in the Japan series as well, that a lot of people would just say, hey, you know, the Pacific League is better and this team is pretty good, and the fighters knocked off the Hawks in the regular season, mm-hmm. that has to mean something. So I just assumed everyone would go with the fighters. But
I understand that part. Yeah, well, I understand that part. And I'll tell you, I was just looking at... I didn't really do any in-depth analysis about this series, which is, you know, sad but true. Just with, you know, I had the remarkable thing of 3 days off this week.
Wow, look at you.
I know. I felt like showing off. And as I'm doing now. And one of the things I'll look for is, you know, and I was listening to the pregame broadcast,
mm-hmm.
and they're talking about, the carp hit more home runs, so they're a better home run hitting team. And we've gone through
not that
this.
Again, just looking at the numbers. Didn't we go through this during the regular season? People, yeah, don't give those people microphones.
I know. And in fact, yeah, the announcer was the whole broadcast, everything was delayed. You know, the graphics were delayed. The announcer's connection with reality was occasionally delayed.
Or just was no connection.
I know. It's like, oh, he struck him out. Oh, wait, that's a foul ball for strike two. Oh, okay. He's out. He's safe. He's out. Wait, what is he? What is this? Is this baseball? Okay, so... I should, you know, and I say that with actually a certain amount of awe, because it's so hard to be on the air live, you know, where all your mistakes, you know, you can't get them back. It's worse than Twitter.
Yeah.
I mean, you can delete on Twitter.
Right.
People can see it, but you can delete it. But,
right.
You know, anyway, so just before the start of the game, I looked at a couple of things I will tend to see. And that was, where did the teams have an edge? And I thought, well, we'll check the home runs. And what I look at for the home runs is not how many they hit, but how many they hit relative to their opponents.
Okay.
So, you know, how much better were they at hitting home runs than they were at preventing them? Okay, now the Carp hit home runs 46% more often than the teams they played.
Right.
That's huge.
Right, and that's one of the things I looked at, is thinking that they have more... players throughout the lineup who can take you deep.
Right.
As opposed to guys who are just slapping at the ball and trying to get on base.
Okay. The fighters are 31%, which is really good. I mean, the fighters have the ability, well, of course, part of that is Shohei Ohtani allowing four home runs in, you know, 140 innings or something. Or he didn't pitch 100 innings or something. So Part of it is that, but still, they were really good at hitting home runs. And I mean, they were a good home run hitting team in a tough home run hitting league.
Right.
But they weren't as good at preventing them overall as the Carp were, relative to, you know, to their own power. Okay, another thing I look at is walks, and they drew walks 16% more often than their opponents. The fighters were 5%.
Mm-hmm.
So these are big things. These are basically two of the biggest things you can do. And pretty much you look at everything. The only, you know, if you look for edges that the fighters have over their opponents, and compared to the Carp, now true enough, the Carp, you know, as we mentioned, and as I drone on and on about endlessly every week, you know, the Pacific League's a tougher league, but boy, the Carp just, you know, they took that weak Central League and just beat it into a mush.
Right, right.
The only advantage the fighters have, and I'll disagree with Patrick Newman, the NPB tracker, is the defense.
Mm-hmm.
The Carp defense is not better than the fighters' defense.
Yeah, I think I saw that and I thought, well, yeah, up the middle maybe for sure, because you've got really two elite defenders, especially on the infield. And I think they're comparable in the outfield, but probably a little bit of an advantage at catcher. But all on the corners, you don't have that. And then in the outfield, you don't have that. So.
Well, I think you do if it's, you know, if it's Brad Eldred and it's not a question of balls, you know, being hit over his head, over the first baseman's head, they have an advantage. And the fighters, because Shonakata is a better fielder. Orion is as good a fielder as Nakata, almost. You know, he would be if he was about 5 years younger.
Right.
But he's certainly really good when he's trying. But Kikuchi, of course, is the best fielder. You know, he's the best fielder on the field for either team. Mm-hmm. I like Nakashima better, but I think the Carp actually, I think Seiya Suzuki and Maru are better or as good as anything the fighters can throw out there, especially Young playing, you know, with a couple of, you know, with a lot of taping and such. And
right, and if you factor in Suzuki's arm.
Yeah, well, it is good. And even third base, Brandon Laird. Yeah, but I mean, no. The fighters basically, and I'll look at it this way, you know, how often did they turn batted balls into outs? The fighters were basically among the league's elite,
mm-hmm.
Among NPB elites, and the Carp were among the Central League elites.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah, so I just thought in certain places, yes, I do think they have a defensive advantage, but I don't think overall.
No, I think overall the fighters have a better defense, but again, the big things are drawn walks and hitting home runs. So anyway, we'll see how that goes.
Okay. So game one went to the Carp 5-1 at home. They played at Mazda Stadium. And I saw a note somewhere that said there have been 66 Japan series, 41 mm-hmm. times. The team that wins game one has gone on to win the series. So that's 62% of the time. So that's not really that big an advantage. But the Carp kind of cruised behind Chris Johnson. But more importantly, they beat Shohei Ohtani. So the Carp get a run early on a double steal
mm-hmm.
in the second inning. And, you know, this is Yoshiyuki Ishihara at the plate. He fails to squeeze home a run. But Seiya Suzuki was the runner at third. And he comes home when the fighters throw through with runners on first and second and two outs, because I think
Ishihara strikes out.
Right.
Well, he strikes out on a pitch, and here's the thing, and the runner on first, Tomohiro Abe, takes off for second, as it will happen sometimes now with two outs.
Mm-hmm.
And
well, it was one out when
before. No, well, but by the time he struck out, yes, by the time he struck out, he's on his way to second.
Right.
Okay, and he's dead, and it looks like, oh, the fighters, you know, ran into a base. From the camera angle, which is focusing on second base, you can just see Abe standing there in the middle of the bases,
mm-hmm.
ready to be out. And the weird thing is this. There are two weird things about this play. It's a great play by the Carp. It's a very typical Carp play.
Mm-hmm.
But the weird thing is that the fighters were really caught unprepared for this.
I didn't see it that way.
Well, go ahead. Go ahead. I'll let you finish. they were not they were because Ohtani missed a sign. Two things happened. Ohtani missed a sign, but it may have been a moot point because the throw from catcher Shota Ono was so bad. You know, Ohtani would have to have been 10 feet tall to catch the ball and cut it off.
Oh, I disagree. Okay, but go ahead. I'm going to let you finish.
Okay, but anyway, the point was the Fighters had a play. Ohtani was supposed to, their signal in the infield was, according to Ohtani, was to cut off the ball.
Right.
Okay, which he missed. He forgot, or he missed, or whatever. Then the throw goes to second, and it's sort of a moot point because by the time the throw is going to second, Seiya Suzuki's halfway home,
right?
And he just sort of trots home then because Takuya Nakashima, the shortstop's covering the bag, and he has to lay out on the turf to keep the ball from going into the outfield.
Right.
So the runner's at second and the run's home easily. So I think they were unprepared for that. They did
That's interesting. You say unprepared. I think everybody on the field knew what was going on. I think the Fighters were ready for the double steal.
Okay,
obviously called the sign for Ohtani to cut the ball off.
Well, you always have a sign. I mean, you always have it's a yes or no thing.
Well, apparently, you're saying Ohtani missed the sign.
Yes.
So they were prepared. I just think they didn't execute.
Okay, fair enough.
That was my opinion. And so,
okay. I think that's a good read.
And you see the throw from Shota Ono, the catcher, and he's throwing it soft. That's why Nakashima has to lay out and get the ball, because the throw wasn't going to second base.
Right.
And then you also, in the replays, you see Ohtani ducking to get out of the way of the ball as it's going through.
Oh, okay. I didn't remember that. You had more access to replays than I did.
I watch, man.
Well, I'm following the game for our report to help our reporter. So
right,
I'm
when
not,
you're looking
I don't
at
have
it
that luxury.
I'm watching. So yeah, Ohtani ducks out of the way and he, you know, basically squats on the mound. So you could tell everybody knew what was going on or knew what was happening or what they were supposed to do on the play, except Ohtani. He just had a blackout or something there. So
I think here's the other thing that had, given where the ball was and Abe got really close to second base when that throw got there.
Mm-hmm.
I think he was looking at that throw thinking it was going to go through into the outfield.
Right. And it was headed for the outfield.
And I'm going to be on third base.
Yeah.
And he was, you know, he wasn't far. He was much, much, much closer to the ball than Suzuki was to home plate. And, you know, they had a chance. Their only chance, you know, this is, of course, just...
hindsight.
What's the word we're looking for?
Second guessing?
I mean, it's just second guessing stuff, but I think their only play was to go after... was to go after Abe before Suzuki scored.
Yeah, there was no reason to throw the ball back to home plate. I know it was kind of close, but I mean, not close enough to get the out. It was kind of close.
It was close enough to make him slide.
But yeah, not close enough to get the out.
He beat the throw by several feet.
So that was interesting. So I think that kind of threw Ohtani off. He was throwing as hard as usual, but he didn't seem to have a lot of movement on his pitches. They were straight, and he served up a couple home runs in the fourth inning. Yuhei Matsuyama and Big Bad Brad Eldred, and they both hit solo shots, and so it becomes a 3-0 game. And you know, KJ, he escaped some jams in the first inning when they didn't really, you know, he gave up 9 hits. And you look, you know, after the game and you look at the numbers, and he came out in the 7th inning. He had thrown 123 pitches. They just kind of wore him down. But a lot of these hits, I mean, there were 3 infield hits, a couple of softies that just rolled through the infield. He didn't get hit hard. The Brandon Laird home run he allowed in the 7th inning when he eventually came out. Was a pitch that it was middle out, and I think Laird was sitting on it, and he got the pitch he wanted, and he hit it out. And then, you know, Johnson just couldn't get out of the inning. He was just tired. The Nakashima single up the middle was just this little bouncing ball that just, you know, was perfectly placed and went through. So,
well, that was the tail of the tape for pretty much with basically half of the fighter's hits were those, you know, just soft contact, but, you know, balls finding ways to get base hits.
Directional hits, yes.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, yeah, big hops, nice, you know, seeing eye balls, you know, whatever. But that's what it was. And I think in retrospect, one of the things that for me that made the game was at the beginning there was umpire Shoji Arizumi.
Mm-hmm.
Missed some calls early.
Did he,
again,
though?
Against both guys.
Yeah, he was. It was a
fairly tight strike zone, and but you
loose,
know, to be honest,
not tight.
Well,
it was changing.
It was changing to some extent in that he missed some early, and he got better, I think, as the game went on. But you know, but having said that, there was one pitch I think I got so used to him missing ones that. Chris Johnson threw one that he was unhappy with. He might have been unhappy with himself because, you know, when I watched the one replay I saw the whole night, it seems, the pitch missed by about three or four inches. Mm-hmm. But it looked like a strike. Yeah, it looked like a strike the first time through. And so, you know, give him credit. I look, oh, wow, that is a good call. But there were some. And I think one of the things that happened in the inning that the Carps scored was that Ohtani got distracted enough by Arizumi's calls,
right?
And that bothered him, and I think that led to the first run. Whereas Chris Johnson was less distracted.
Yeah, I was going to say he was having his issues out there chomping.
He did, but he did a better job of getting weak contact after the umpires were annoying him. And he had two, you know, back-to-back walk, two out walks. So, he was able to get the job done in the end, and Ohtani was not.
Now, I wanted to get your take on that seventh inning, too, because you had the leadoff home run by Brandon Laird, mm-hmm. and then the infield hit, technically hit, Shohei Ohtani hits a ball to first base. Chris Johnson didn't really bust it over there.
He got a big start, and I think, and he said, "Wait, this guy's the pitcher."
Yeah, he didn't.
And then he turned around. He's on first. He got there before I did. What's up with that?
So they ruled it a hit, and
yeah, well, you kind of have to in that.
You kind of have to, and I understand. And then your bunt buddy, Hideki Kuriyama, has obviously the tying run at the plate.
With no outs and sends up
Keiji Yano,
mm-hmm.
and doesn't bunt, mm-hmm. in a situation where if you bunt and get one run closer, that mm-hmm. will get you, maybe you got the eighth inning and ninth inning, maybe you can get one swing and tie the score up.
Mm.
So I thought it was kind of strange to send up Yano. Maybe he was trying to catch, you know, that lightning strike and get even at that point, but I just kind of found it weird because you've got one third of the game left, essentially.
Mm.
You've got those nine outs. I thought it was weird that your bunt buddy didn't do what he's known for.
Yeah, it is weird, and he played it differently than, you know. I don't disagree with what happened, which is I've got Yano. I'm gonna let him swing.
Yeah, and he's good against lefties. Yeah,
and he's good against lefties, and you know Johnson's already thrown 115 pitches or so. So, yeah, I'm going to go in there and give him a shot. But, you know, but you are correct in pointing that this is not how Kuriyama normally plays. Normally, he's two runs down in the seventh inning. He's bunting. He's right. Bunting with two outs.
Hashtag high.
Okay. Maybe not. But he's thinking about bunting with two outs.
You think...
I bet it's crossed his mind.
He's asking his coaches, hey, what do you think?
but I love, you know, up to this point, it was because the fighters had some good luck, you know, in this game and getting those hits. And, but the carp just managed to stay alive. So, I mean,
it had to be eating at him because Yano grounds into a double play,
right.
And then Nishikawa gets a hit, and he just had to be grinding his gears. I'm just sure of it. He's like, why didn't I bunt? We'd have a run, and we'd have runners on, you know.
Well, I don't know if they would have had a run considering how shallow Mara was playing, but it would have been interesting. And so anyway, it was interesting, and I think, again, talking about the hits, I mean, the Ohtani hit was, you know, he beat Chris Johnson to the bag when Johnson wasn't looking. he was looking at the ball and concentrating on getting the ball, and I'm going to step on the bag, and whoa, who was that?
Right.
So, and then the next one is a single to the pitcher where he, you know, he got caught between, he went to field the ball between first and third. He didn't really have a play, and Nishikawa also busted it up the line for his second infield hit of the game, and, you know, and then they get a real, actually, kind of a, you know, a bouncer up the middle. As most of these hits are. I mean, Brandon Laird, and really they had three hits in this game of any quality.
Right, right.
And it was the Shohei Ohtani second inning double, which really surprised me because when I saw it, looked to me.
Yeah, off the bat, that just looked like a floater.
It looked like a high fly, you know, like a really high fly to center, but boy, that thing carried, and he must have hit it pretty darn hard to reach the warning track.
Yeah, yeah.
So,
well,
anyway,
hit the wall, right? Yeah. So,
So, anyway, and the other one were the two Brandon Laird singles. Excuse me, the one Brandon Laird single. The other one was a line out, but he hit the ball pretty well.
Yeah.
So, anyway, so it, yeah, so that was the Fighters' offense consisted of getting lucky.
So then I thought it was. Here's the thing: is you know, they took Johnson out, which I thought was fine. I thought, who are they going to bring in? And you know, I just have this bad image of Takeru Imamura. I just remember calling him the run maker, and you know, him bringing him to get out of a jam, I thought was bad news. And he made a couple of good pitches, and the last one he made to Oka was, he kind of got in on him with a fastball, and
I thought he did a good job.
He did a good job. He did do a good job.
And I'll tell you the thing about Imamura, because I certainly had, you know, my opinion of him was never as low as yours, and but this year, you know, you had to face reality. He had a couple of, I think he had some issues, physical issues, for a couple of years, but this year I watched him work his way back, and I thought he was fairly reliable.
Imamura, for me, he's just been a guy, just walks guys, just didn't, you know, he didn't have a lot of movement on the fastball.
We're talking about 2012.
Yeah, I'm talking about the old image of him, and he hasn't really, you know, he's been up and down, been an elevator guy, up from the farm, get some use out of him, send him back down, kind of a guy. But and even this year, he wasn't a steady presence in the bullpen.
No, it was sort of from the middle of the season. He sort of, you know, it's like the Carp bullpen, you know, came together and they started getting very solid innings. We stopped seeing Katsuhiro Nagakawa about June, and right. Imamura
Thank
stepped
goodness.
In. Yeah, I know. It's like Ogata woke up one day and it says, man, no more drugs for me.
# high heat.
So,
I'm going to rehab.
That's right. Man, what was I thinking? So we stopped seeing him, but Imamura came in and he looked good. But you know, of course, I didn't think Imamura was a problem. But what I was thinking was, well, let's see. This is a chance because in the eighth inning, you're going to get Jay Jackson, who is more of a Pacific League type reliever.
Right.
And, you know, throws hard and somebody who might be a bit of a challenge for him. So I'm thinking, this is your chance. You know, two outs, two on. But Imamura does the job, and then we get the bottom of the seventh and the Carps score twice.
Right. Right. And then Jay Jackson comes on in the eighth. Struck out the first two guys, then put the next two guys on, but got out of trouble. And then Nakazaki in the ninth was good, so the Carp win. And looking ahead,
I want to ask you a question because you're Mr. Replay.
Sure.
What'd you think of Maru's catch? Because it's two out. Now, Yoshihiro Maru makes a catch in the two out in the eighth inning and two on and saves two runs. And it's a four-run game, and he keeps it from being a two-run game. So what'd you think of the catch?
I tweeted, round and round Maru, round and round Maru. You know, I didn't think it was that. The announcers on TV said that they were playing shallow, which I didn't see when I saw him running.
I think they were playing fair. They were playing, shallower than
a
normal.
A few steps in, maybe, yeah. But the ball was high. When it left the bat, I thought it was an out.
I thought it was too. But I think what happened was he appeared to the ball broke on him a little bit, but I think the bigger problem was the outfield grass was too slick.
Mm.
Because he looked like his body was out of alignment. You know, his it looked like his lower body was going to run out, going to leave his upper body behind, and he was going to fall over.
Right.
But so he made a very awkward looking catch. But, you know, the point being that he made the catch, and it didn't look like he did it first, but he came down with the ball, and that saved two runs and possibly the game.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, of course, those two runs score. It's 5-3. They still don't have the, you know, it's not tied, but they're a home run away from tying it. So, yeah, it was a big catch, and I thought it was an out off the bat. But, yeah, obviously the rain and... it started raining again. I think it was falling at that time a little bit. So probably a difficult catch and a good play. I'd put a star by that one. But
okay. I see.
Normally, I think if the conditions were normal.
Oh, yeah, no. The normally, rain, that would have been an easy out.
That's a typical out, yeah. Okay, so looking ahead at the rest of the series, I think as this thing gets deeper, we'll see the... a few holes, I think, in the fighters. I really like with Zenshin Masui, Hirotoshi.
Mm-hmm.
Masui did for the fighters, and he's going to start tonight. So by the time you guys are listening to this, that game will be over. And yeah, I don't know what to expect from him. I know he did really well for a number of starts against. Again, we talked about the Pacific League being a little bit better, and he got those teams out with ease, it seemed. He went through their lineups a number of times. He didn't just go once through the order. He went three times through the order, pitched deep into games, kept the runs off the board. So I don't really know what to expect. I can see him doing the same thing to Hiroshima, and I can also see him, you know, being gone by the fifth inning. And you know, him having his defense tested all night long in a place where there was just rain the day before. So I don't know. And then once we get to the rookies, I saw, obviously, Luis Mendoza during the week talking about he volunteered to be a closer, but in reality, he should be one of the guys who's starting, and it shouldn't be these rookies, Takanashi and, Hirotoshi Takanashi and Takayuki Kato. So neither one of those guys pitched really well in their postseason debuts, and you know, I would imagine that at least one of them is going to be able to rebound and pitch better because they really helped carry the team big time in that club record 15-game winning streak. But here we are in the playoffs, and they were largely ineffective in their start. So I would imagine one of them is going to bounce back, but the other one is not going to have a great start. So that's going to be a problem, I think, for the... they didn't win that first game with Ohtani on the mound, so it doesn't bode well for them as they go forward. So, what are you looking at in terms of the rotation of the fighters and the pitching? Because we don't know who's going to close. Chris Martin, I read where he had gone back to the States because of this ankle situation, so he's not around. Anthony Bass, love him. You know, he pitched fairly well last night. It was unfortunate.
Pitched out of trouble.
Yeah, he came in. You know, got them out of some trouble.
Well, he created a little trouble, and then he got them out of it. So,
right. So, you know, we don't know what the situation is at the very back of the bullpen, and bridging that gap to the closer. It's a weird situation to have a team in this predicament, I would say, in the Japan series.
Yeah, somebody, I don't know, was it Patrick who said that the fighters' bullpen was better? And I think here we have a quality issue, quality versus quantity issue, The fighter's bullpen are much like the Carp team as a whole.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have the best of the best, but they got a lot of the very good. You know, I think Jay Jackson might be the best reliever on either team.
Uh-huh.
And Nakazaki might be second best without Chris Martin out there.
Right.
But, you know, after you get to that, then you get Imamura, who's had issues in the past, and you get Ichioku, who's had issues in the past, and so you get a lot of guys who are, you know, who've had past issues, and they're not certain, but the fighters guys are a step above that. Mm-hmm. So they're in between that group, but they've got a whole string of those guys. They've got a flotilla of these pretty good middle relievers. So if this game were to go, for example, if this game is going to go 12-13 innings, I like the fighters' chances in extra innings better than I like the Carp.
Mm.
But getting them there is going to be a challenge. If the Carp starters can go six innings, it's going to be a tough challenge for the fighters. Of course, the other thing now is we get to see Ohtani focusing on his hitting.
Right. And he only had two hits last night, although, you know, the double was a nice shot. The infield single was kind of cheap, but hey, it goes down as a hit, and he had two of them.
Well, he got, you know, that's like what Pete Rose said about Ichiro, him being lucky to have all those infield hits, and says, you know, it was good luck that blessed him with all that speed, and good luck with blessed him with that ability to make contact to the other side.
Right.
And so it was lucky, and it was lucky that Ohtani ran so hard to first and is quite quick. So, right. Yeah.
So now the Carp have their own issues on the mound, I think, in that Yusuke Nomura, again, it's a man going tonight on Sunday night. So by the time you listen to this will be moot. But he, again, pitched well in his postseason debut, yep. But he's the guy who normally gives up a lot of base runners, mm-hmm. makes a lot of pitches, so you don't expect him to pitch deep into the game or pitch a complete game or anything like that. And then the rookie right-hander Akitake Okada, who got a big lead in his postseason debut against the Bay Stars, only to give up a bunch of runs and not be able to keep it together on the big stage mm-hmm. for a long time. How does he pitch in his game? Of course, we've got Kuroda coming out, and like I said, I think he's going to give it his all, but I don't know that his all and his best is going to be good enough to win a game. It might be, you know, if you can really find something, but there were times on the mound this year where he just had nothing going for him, and he just gutted out trying to spot the ball and get guys out or get him mm-hmm. to hit the ball somewhere at somebody. I don't know that that's going to help him against a team that's really good at getting on base and just making contact like we saw off of Chris Johnson. Mm. So we should see some runs scored, that's for sure.
Yeah, I think so. But again, we'll have to get better at bats. Obviously, Chris Johnson said, I'll have to say something to the effect of, because I wasn't actually there, but my colleague was, and basically Chris Johnson said, yeah, we basically looked at Shohei Nakata as the key to keep them, you know, to limit their offense was to sort of defuse him in the middle of the order. And, you know, they struck him out three times and they got a tailor-made double play. So those two double plays that Johnson got were just huge. And yep. it was a fun game to watch.
Yeah, so by the time we talk to you guys next week, hopefully everything will be done and we can just talk about who won.
Yeah, there were some people on Twitter saying, you know, let's play eight.
Some people, huh?
Well, it was more than one person. It wasn't just John Gibson.
Oh, okay. All right. No, I didn't say let's play eight. I said how
anyone you know, it's like, out for let's, game eight. Let's, yeah, Ernie Banks, wimp, eight, not two, eight. Because some of you may not know that the Japan series has ties. And after 15 innings, in fact, after 15 innings of a game is tied, it's called over. And if there's a tie and game seven ends with a series tied, they don't do like the climax series and just give it to one of the teams.
Mm-hmm. They have to play it out.
They have another game. So we have game eight, and we have had game eights before. But one thing we've never had in Japan is a game eight that goes to extra innings. Now, the significance of that is that if game eight goes to extra innings, then it doesn't end until the game's over. So we could have a game in Japan that goes beyond 15 innings.
Right.
Yeah. Actually, there is a possibility to have more games than game eight, but let's not get into that scenario.
No, let's stop.
That would require a bunch of ties.
No, stop. Stop the
madness. And in that case, game eight, anyway, so game eight is played at the, it would be played this year at the Central League Park. And if game nine is required, the teams would travel back to Sapporo for that.
Okay, stop. Stop the madness. Let's make a four-seam transition and talk about the draft here.
Yeah, something equally logical.
Oh, gosh. Yeah, well, on the notes, I think you got the gist of what my feelings were because I put draft farce. And this was Thursday. Every year I'm very frustrated, upset, disgusted, confused, furious about the draft. And it,
oh, well, all these feelings okay, all well, at once. John, stop sitting on the fence, man. Come out. I mean, just say it. Don't
well, I'll
that.
Say it here. You know, I'm going to go on a rant. If anyone who's listening to our show can get to the commissioner, Mr. Katsuhiko Kumazaki, and get him to listen to this.
Oh, okay.
Tell him to stop this ridiculous draft selection party now. You know, there's no mechanism in place for small market or low budget teams to improve.
Why
you know,
would there
we talked
be?
About competitive balance and all that stuff and how that would be better. We talked about it years ago on the show.
Sure.
How that would at least give these teams an opportunity to improve themselves through the draft. And well, right now, the way the teams can get better is they can draft a good player and then develop him. But that takes a long time, and that's not a plan because you don't know how these guys are going to turn out. I know you want to say something. Go ahead.
Well, first of all,
right in the middle
I'm
of my
I'm relieved that you said get to Kumazaki and convince him because I thought you were going to get to Kumazaki and do something horrible to him.
I'd never suggest violence. You know I'm a non-violent
I know you wouldn't. Yeah. I know you, but you know, jokingly sometimes. You,
not
you
even
do.
Jokingly.
Oh, yeah. Okay. No. So, anyway, so yeah, I'm relieved about that. But yes, it is hard and the competitive balance is an issue which has become... It's become more of an issue, and the draft is more competitive now than it was, say, 10 years ago.
Yes, and because they've changed some of the rules, and we know that you know there used to be under-the-table money, and teams would go to the best players available and
players
strike
would
deals
go to
with
the
them.
Oh,
and
teams would
vice
go,
versa.
Oh, that's correct. Okay, I'm sorry. I interrupted you, but you can cut off.
Yeah, well, and vice versa. You're saying that the players say, well, I want to go to this team. As long as they give me this amount of money, I'll go there and that kind of thing. There was this kind of stuff that garbage is gone. But this, you know, sitting around at the dinner table and, you know, the high-priced teams basically having the pick of the litter and the low-market teams not even trying to draft these high-name or high-profile players because they know that other teams are going to also try to select them.
Mm-hmm.
So, and they just want to get a player who's really good. So they just go for someone else instead of trying to get these really talented players.
Right.
And I'm sitting there watching the draft at the office and there's no real huge nugget other than Seigi, Tanaka, Chihaya, Sasaki. Those guys were pretty much, you know, the pick of the litter this time in terms of guys who are ready now or guys who have a really bright future.
Yeah, oddly
enough.
Other
guys can be developed.
Had anybody picked... Had anybody picked Sasaki in the first round, they would have had as their first round draft choice. They would have had him
exactly. And this is the thing: is that you know I'm sitting there watching, and I know that you know it's not like the NFL draft or some of the other drafts where you change on the fly once everybody puts a pick in. These teams are forced to like throw their second pick after they do this lottery thing. They just throw their second pick out there.
Mm-hmm.
No one. There's no order. It's just ridiculous. I'm tired of it. I just want to see an order.
you know, whatever it is, decide draft. The order and let those guys go out and pick the players they want, and let's stop with this lottery thing and you know, nine teams picking one guy and somebody.
Well, it's a eight farce. Teams is the record,
I know, actually. I'm exaggerating. It's my tool. So Jim, I'm begging. Can we fix this thing? It's broken. It needs immediate attention. What can we do? We got to get more competitive balance. We should see the teams like the Oryxes, the Eagles, all the teams that didn't make the playoffs should be vying for those top players instead of the Fighters, you know, who've gotten top players before. The Hawks, who got the best pitcher supposedly in the draft last year, getting the best pitcher again this year. This is not helping baseball, and it's not going to be helping the popularity unless you can develop these players really fast, which I don't think you can.
Well, it depends, of course. And as you said, last year the Hawks got their first choice, who was Takahashi, was a high school guy. So, you know, we're not seeing him right away. But, you know, the essential issue is competitive balance, because for you that's an issue, and for NPB as a whole it's an issue. But there are several teams right now who still see, you know, there's several Central League teams who still believe the Central League is better than the Pacific League, that nobody wants to see the Pacific League. Nobody wants to see weak teams on the field. So let's make those weak teams weaker, and let's let the strong, you know, we run the show. So if this is the Yomiuri Giants, which John can't harass too much, but basically the Yomiuri Giants believe that baseball was created for them. They created the current league.
I can say whatever I want.
Okay, I know you can.
Right.
But the Yomiuri Giants essentially created the league. And that's not an overstatement. And they've essentially run Japanese professional baseball. Not 100%, but they can get enough teams to support them. And in the past, whenever there was too much vocal opposition, they would say, well, if you guys want to change baseball, we'll leave and have fun with it. We'll start our own league. And that generally quiets. Right. That's how the Giants got free agency. Past when they thought it was a good idea to be able to, you know, help, you know, to throw a bone to the players, because we love the players so much and they should have the rights to play for the Yomiuri Giants if they want to. So right. Anyway, so no, competitive balance was never, and this is true also in America, the draft, and I've said this before, so I'll keep it brief. The baseball draft was not intended for competitive balance. It was intended to prevent amateur players from having the right to sell their services to whoever, you know, to whom they wanted to sell them to. In other words, not necessarily, but in most cases, in a free market and to the highest bidder. So they didn't like that. Because and this was not a problem for the Giants. They were happy competing. The Hanshin Tigers and the Yomiuri Giants were always happy competing for the highest priced players.
Right.
This was a suggestion by the Pacific League's Nishitetsu Lions, who at that time were on the downslide at the end of their dynasty, and they said, "Look, well, you know, these amateurs are costing us too much money." This was 50 years ago.
Right.
So it was never part of the thing, and the crucial issue that could be added without causing too much damage to the overall draft, but could cause damage to teams like the Yomiuri Giants, who have occasionally depended on players saying, if I don't get signed by the Giants, I won't sign at all, to scare other players. You know, players do this all the time. If I don't get signed by Team A, I'm going to sit out and go, you know, go to corporate league ball or whatever. And it happens all the time. And the way to prevent that from happening is to allow every team to get a compensation pick. In the majors, they have a compensation pick that goes, if the player you draft does not sign with you, you get an equivalent compensation, an equivalent No, it's not quite equivalent, but you get an additional draft pick in the following draft. Now, some teams, including the Nippon Ham Fighters, have pushed for this, obviously because the Nippon Ham Fighters have twice thrown away their first draft choice on players who refused to play unless they were signed by the Giants.
Right.
And they got nothing for those. So that would be a nice difference to have.
But it would be, yeah.
I mean, and then they could keep the draft lottery and so on and so forth, and it wouldn't be as much a thing. The draft lottery is, of course, to prevent the weak teams from having an advantage in the first round. Of course, it used to be, and a lot of people might not remember this, but it used to be there were draft lotteries in every round.
Yeah.
You know, the waiver, the order of the draft was completely meaningless.
Yeah.
And then
meaningless.
Of course, famously, when the Yomiuri Giants didn't get the player they wanted in the draft, they basically threw the draft out the window, boycotted the draft, ran their own draft. You know, they just broke the rules and did what they wanted to. Shock there. Anyway.
So I had some stats I was going to go through, but we're going to be pushed for time here. I know there's 61 pitchers selected. There's always a lot of pitchers selected.
Yeah.
I did notice an abundance of so-called older guys who are either coming out of college or corporate ball.
Yeah, the number of high school players is generally decreasing every year.
Yeah, so they're looking more toward guys who can help right away.
Mm-hmm.
And you went out to the draft, and I know you talked to Alex Ramirez.
I did. I caught up with Alex Ramirez at the amateur draft, and I catch up is the word because, you know, it's weird. The reporters are chasing managers and front office guys all over the place, and they finally, you know, they'll corner them somewhere, and I did see where the Bay Stars media pack had cornered Alex Ramirez. And I went over, and he was talking about, when you hear him, he'll be talking at first about Haruhiro Hamaguchi,
mm-hmm.
who was DeNA's third first choice of the draft day. Now you might
third say, first choice, yeah.
Yeah, they had three first round picks, but no, they didn't. They only got one. They got the bottom. You know, they got. I don't want to impugn Mr. Hamaguchi. So they got there. He did not. They did not get their top two choices, but they did get their third choice in the first round. So anyway, you'll hear him talking about that, and also asked him a couple of questions about the media basically spends, you know, there's not a lot to talk about on draft day. They talk tons before the draft about, you know, who the candidates are, and afterwards they talk about the teams talking about the candidates, but all that's pretty cut and dried. Basically it comes down to what color was the manager's underwear? Who did the picking? And which hand were you planning to do it with? And
great,
yeah. And so I listened to the reporters ask Kimiyasu Kudo, you know, what was your strategy as well? I had a blue lucky tie, and when I looked into the box, there were three on the left and one on the right. And his draft strategy was, as I wrote in the story the other day, was to think good thoughts, to think that I hope my pick helps him go to the team he wants to play for.
Okay.
And that worked last year, and apparently it worked again this year. But anyway, long story short, that's the draft, and you'll hear Ramirez with a few comments about that.
Very happy that we drafted some players that I strongly believe that we can use next year and that can, you know, help the team to win. So I'm very happy about that.
Ramirez was so happy about Dubai, and you know, he said that, you know, he wants to the pitcher like a Miura, we can last long.
Yeah, for what I understand, he's a very tough guy, you know, and you know, he's a power pitcher, and you know, he maintains his condition, you know, very good. You know, of course, I strongly believe that he is going to be a guy that he can be around for, you know, for many years. You know, we just got to focus in helping him to build to, you know, to those expectations. So
I still pick up the pitchers more than the fielders.
Well, you know, I mean, I think that what we need right now is pitching more than what we need fielders. You know, of course, you know, we got some fielders that, you know, we believe that with time they can help us, but our main point was pitchers right now.
I mean, like, which hand are you going to draw with? And what?
Yeah, well, I guess that's part of that, you know, the whole picking up, right? The draft. So, but you know, it was a good experience. So.
No performance. I was expected.
Well, no performance. Yeah. Well, I didn't have any choice.
I know, you picked the one that was left.
I just got the leftover.
I know, but I was listening to Kudo answer the question like, you know, there were two on the left and two on the right, and the one on the top on the left looked like the lucky one. I'm going like, give me a break.
Well, so, I didn't have any choice, so I just went for whatever was there.
Sometimes you feel like in Japan, like this, like every day, some days, you're going to see something you've never seen before.
Well, I think that, you know, the explanations, you know, it's getting a little bit more omoshiroi. it's fun.
It's part of the game.
It's part of the game.
Yeah,
so.
Might as well enjoy it, I guess.
Exactly.
I got to write a story about about the lottery.
Exactly.
Okay. Right. Okay. Good luck, man.
Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Alex. I think you're going to get a break from us next week.
yeah.
Unless you show up in Sapporo.
Yeah. Thank you for getting that. That was good. So, I also noticed that I was extremely impressed by the Giants taking a NPB high 15 players and adding some guys to their developmental team and for their third farm level team. So that I think that they're looking to develop guys because they've been able to get a guy like Tetsuya Yamaguchi, no one since, you know, Shinosuke Shigenobu is a guy who looks like he could develop for them eventually and be one of those little pesky batters. So I thought that was interesting. Like I said, I had a lot of stats that I just, God bless her, our friend Deanna Rubin, she blogged about every loving last kid or last loving kid who was selected, and I don't know if I see the point in that. You get a lot of guys who sometimes are not going to be in baseball in a couple of years, or they're not going to be in, you know, in this level in NPB. They might be in independent ball or corporate league or somewhere.
Well, she knows who a lot of these people are. She's watched them play. That's extremely cool, I think. Now, some of these guys are going to be, you know, again, most of the low round draft choices don't ever go anywhere, but now and then, you know, one of the things about the draft that's kind of funny is you think about Tetsuto Yamada. Now, he was the Swallows, like the Bay Stars this year, they failed to get the guy they wanted with their first round pick. They lost a lottery, and they lost another lottery, and they said, what are we going to do? Okay, we'll go for this guy. What's his name? Yamada Tetsuto? Is that a name? We'll take this guy. And they got the best, you know, they get who is arguably the best player in NPB.
Because
they failed to get Yuki Saito.
Yeah. Oh, God.
Sometimes the pick, this happens now and then, that the alternate pick is much, you know, it's like the free agent market. Sometimes the guy you pick up as compensation for the free agent is better than the free agent.
Right. And I'm not saying that every top rated player is going to turn out
to be the guy
we expect, but I'm just saying those lower level teams or low budget teams should have the opportunity to pick the guy they
absolutely
want.
Absolutely.
And try to develop him.
I mean, I think, I'm not going to say they should, but if NPB thought what's best, you know, if NPB got together and said what's best for NPB as a whole, wouldn't that be better? Of course, you'll have to understand that for as long as I've been in Japan, the argument was NPB is better when the Hanshin Tigers and the Yomiuri Giants are strong. And I'm not kidding, but people came on TV and said that.
Yeah.
Over and over and over. The best thing for NPB is to have the Giants be strong because they're the most popular team, so we should help them be strong. We should and help other teams us. Buy into that again. Where you
more
know
money for you by losing.
I know, and so we know where you know that whole issue with the Katsuhiro Nagakawa goes, because the you know the substances are not only being used by one person; they're fairly widespread around here.
Widespread. All right, let's make a two-seam transition before we close it out here and talk about Kuroda's retirement.
Yeah.
So there was no surprise there. There's no doubt he's going to the Hall. He made the announcement this past week, and the only question is, will he go out on top? And, of course, as I predicted last week, I have Carp in six, so I think he will.
Mm.
You know, I've been talking about it all season, how that last season Shinji Sasaoka had for the Carp was an example of how Kuroda had been looking with every pitch this year, and I was confident he'd retire at the end of the season, so I saw this coming from a mile away. Blah, blah, blah. The difference between, you know, the fighters have had this thing going since Masaru Takeda, their little lefty soft-throwing pitcher, announced his retirement, and he, you know, he's been saying, win it for me, win one for me, win this, do this for me.
Win it for the giver.
And so I think Kuro-chan is able to cancel that mojo yeah. thing that the fighters are going out because
played their retirement card.
Right. And I think he's able to cancel that out with his, so he gives some extra inspiration to teammates.
I'm just thinking if they wanted to, you know, if the fighters could double down, they could start Takeda against Kuroda.
They could. Yeah, they could. I was thinking, but somebody was talking about that. Yeah, he should be able to go out there and get a batter out, you know, get a lefty batter out or something like that. So,
well, I don't think that'll happen, but
No, I don't think so.
But Kuroda, you know, the interesting thing about Kuroda's retirement, and a couple of things didn't surprise me. One is somebody asked, when did you start thinking about it? He said 2 to 3 years ago, and that sounds exactly right, because the day I interviewed him in New York 2 years ago was basically I never know. And he's not the most cheerful guy in the world.
No.
And it's a lot of, you know, baseball's hard and it's a challenge and it's a struggle and come on, can you give me something positive? I get an off season in which I struggle and strive. Okay. So thanks a lot. But I got that impression that 2-3 years ago that he was on the verge, and he did say he was going to come back to Japan because he didn't think he'd be capable of pitching in Japan after another year in the majors. And
right.
He said last year he didn't want to retire pitching as poorly as he did, and he pitched poorer than he did last year. So, you know, the Carp winning the championship was an out. It's like somebody's holding up. He suddenly saw this big exit sign.
Yeah.
And said, oh man, thank you, I'll take it. You know, he didn't take any second looks. He was gone. So
yeah.
I think that was what was going on. I don't think it was a case of the Carp winning the championship. I think as much as that gave him a way of saying, well, basically I'm not as good as I wanted to be, which is, I think, more the real reason. I think if he was, you know, if he was just a little bit more effective consistently, if he was able to make his pitches a little more consistently with fewer aches and pains, I don't think there's a chance he'd retire. But I think the fact that he's and the championship.
I agree.
Okay. So let's move on.
I agree. So, the Carp have had this thing. There's no really good translation for it, but they've been saying, at some point in the season, that God is with us. They have this rallying cry. And so now you've got this going with the God is with us. You've got the Kuroda thing. And the whole we've got to beat Ohtani kind of the challenge mentality. I think it's a real interesting dynamic for the whole, and a subplot for the whole Japan series. And you know, I don't know that it's going to be a long series. Obviously we're all hoping for that, but
The last time the Carp won the Japan series, the Nippon Ham Fighters were playing at Korakuen Stadium in Tokyo.
Uh-huh.
It's been a while, and it's a different. It is, as you said, Hiroshima is a different dynamic. It's something of a unique city. The god was with us. Interesting. I mean, Tanaka, Kosuke Tanaka's hitting in the climax series was, as Mr. Koichi Ogata, the manager, said, godlike.
Mm.
You know, he was the god. He was godly. So
he was.
So, in any case, yeah, it is interesting, and I think this is going to be fun. You have to like. They're both very likable, very progressive, baseball oriented franchises. Like, you know, oddly enough, if you look back 10, 15 years, who would want to emulate the Carp? You know, they play in a dumpy stadium, basically. Great. They make all their money off of merchandise and paying the players as little as possible and getting rid of anybody whose salary might need to jump. And
Great point.
And now what they've done is, because they're partners with the city of Hiroshima, they have a great deal on a beautiful stadium. And because they're so good at merchandising and so good at ballpark entertainment, they're beginning to make money hand over fist. And now Rock 10's saying, wow, we can do that. The Fighters are saying, we can do that. Yokohama's saying, we can do that. These, you know, the Carp have really had a huge impact on how Japanese baseball is played. And those are the teams that, you know, 10 years ago were the jokes of NPB.
And now they're business models.
And they're changing the game. And the Yomiuri Giants are trying their best to sort of keep the rules in place that make these the best teams, keep them the best. But they're not going to be the best for, you know, they're not guaranteed a spot at the table, as they used to say every time somebody said, let's change it. I said, well, there's no rule. We're going to always be good. This rule might help somebody else in the future. And now they're going to be looking to change in those rules.
Yep. That's an excellent point by you, and you know, when you think about the long view, and I've been talking about how popular the sport is right now, is at a really high level in popularity, and it still has a lot of room to grow. So hopefully it will. And by the time we talk to you guys next week, the season will be over.
Unless we go to one of those apocalyptic
strike 10 games. Out.
You wish.
All right, guys, send your questions or comments, or, you know, MP3 questions or comments to yakyujohn@gmail.com. Tweet us at #HighHeat at JBW Podcast on Twitter, or you can go to the Facebook page and leave us a comment there. Look for us on iTunes. We will talk to you next week.
Thanks for listening, and may all your first round draft choices go your way.
Enjoy your Japan series.